to Creative Therapy Umbrella. This is a place where we talk about all different types of creative arts therapies, expressive therapy, and creative approaches to therapy. I am Kate Shannon. I will be your host, and I am really, really pumped about today's episode. It very much speaks to my heart and some things I've gone through as a clinician going through burnout, and this is just such a wonderful conversation with Sarah. Before we get into that, I do want to make sure that you are aware that we have a huge giveaway going on over on Instagram. And this giveaway is actually just phenomenal. There are about 10 small businesses that have gotten together to create a giveaway. You know, 2020 has been a really tough year, and we really wanted to partner together and end the year on a good note and to have something exciting to look forward to. So if you enter for this, the chance to win this giveaway on Instagram, you can actually win three prizes, or there's three opportunities to win. There is a grand prize winner and there are two runner-ups. The grand prize winner, I mean, there's like 12 things in this thing. You can win a music and movement instrument pack from Bear Paw Creek, my Cultivating Creative Resiliency course, Move, Sing, and Breathe, and the Coping Tools workbook from Dynamic Links, Mandy's Mom, the music therapist from Haley, who was on our show a little while ago, a podcast bundle from Music Therapy Podcast Collective. Don't forget about that name. I'm going to be talking to you about that name in a few weeks. Lights, Camera, Telehealth from Music for Kiddos. Gratitude Intervention and Strategies from Music Therapy Made Simple. They've also been on the show. A Relaxation and Creative Arts Experiences Toolbox from Music Works, which sounds so fun. A tech bundle and headphones and a pop filter. And then also a $25 West Music gift card. There is so, so much. And that's just... That is like the huge grand prize winner. So there are still the runner up. You still get tons of stuff if you win in the runner up. So definitely make sure to check that out. It's going to be really, really awesome. So without further ado, let's start talking about how awesome this episode is. So in this episode, Sarah Scott Dooling is on, and she is a licensed clinical social worker as well as a registered play therapy supervisor. She specializes in play therapy, but she also teaches. She teaches graduate level classes. She talks a little bit about her schedule, and I just love hearing her talk about it. You can tell it lights her up. And Sarah is one of those people, you can tell that throughout this. Like, you can hear her smile and hear how things light her up, and I just love it. So she teaches classes, and she also facilitates professional development workshops for clinicians and educators. Her mission is to equip people working with kids in high-stakes scenarios with the skills and self-awareness to thrive. So through her workshops, webinars, and her consultations, she really helps clinicians hone their craft, cultivate resilience, and reconnect with their purpose. I just, my heart is so warm just hearing that. I love it. So in the episode, Sarah talks about so much of the stuff that she does, the importance of caring for ourselves as therapists. And, you know, we touch on compassion fatigue and burnout and the steps that you can take to dig yourself out of those things, how to notice that you're there in the first place, the importance of supervision and consultation. And I think really what I just love best about this episode is Sarah is such a warm and enjoyable and fun person to be with and talk with. And her voice being an advocate for therapists, like, I feel like she is just like out there advocating for therapists to be taken care of the way that therapists advocate for their clients. So I'm endlessly grateful for Sarah, and I hope you thoroughly enjoy this episode. Okay, Sarah, welcome to the podcast.
I am so excited to be here. Thank you for having me.
You're so welcome. I'm so pumped to have you and just beyond excited about all of the tangents that we're going to explore on this episode. Yes. So for our listeners, I have just read your bio, which is always what we do at the beginning. But can you tell us a little bit about what you do as a clinician and as a speaker?
Yes, I would love to. I feel like I can't believe I get to do what I do in a week. So I'm always really excited to have a chance to talk about this. Yes. I remember dreaming of when I was studying in my MSW program of like, do you know, I remember my first job out. Oh, look at, I'm already on a tangent. I took a job, the first job I got, I felt like that was the right thing to do. And I was so unhappy. And, you know, a couple of weeks in, I was like, I just think I'm not meant to work. You know, I just think maybe I don't like working. And I got a job as a school social worker, which is what I always really longed to do. And realized I do love working, but I needed something a little bit different every day, which I think a lot of us, certainly in the helping field and in social work, really long for each day to feel a little bit different, to do, you know, kind of dabble in all kinds of different stuff. So, so I sometimes break it down by my week. I get to, on Mondays, see clients and as a therapist. I see adults and I'm a registered play therapist. So I see children as well, virtually now, of course. I teach at San Diego State University in their MSW program. So I teach on Tuesdays. And on Wednesdays, I work for school district doing consulting. So I do that on Wednesdays. And then Thursdays, I teach again. And Fridays, I see clients again. So really a little bit of everything, which is amazing. And most of my work is focused on, I kind of say it's like helping people who help kids, which is like a wild oversimplification of it. But it's really, I primarily, you know, work with all child people who are working to become child therapists, play therapists, school-based clinicians, so in supervision and consultation and teaching at the university, and that's what I get to do. And then out of that came I just became really enamored by and deeply curious about self-care. Like, how are we helping these people doing this really incredible work cultivate resilience and take care of themselves?
Yes. Oh my gosh. You have like, that is a dream schedule.
Oh my gosh. Thank you for letting me put the schedule out there. This
is amazing. Oh my gosh. I feel like I resonated with that so much of, I find doing, you know, a full week, and some people, this is like their sweet spot where they're like clients Monday through Friday all day. Like that is where they shine and thrive. But for me, it's not. And I was like, oh my gosh, do I just need to work? Like what's going on? Mm-hmm. And then realized like, oh, I just need something a little bit different. And that's totally doable too.
It's totally doable. And I want to just like give doses of hope to everyone listening out there because same when I would do like 7 sessions in a day and I would be so unhappy by the end of the day and think, well, I'm not cut out to be a therapist.
Yes.
But that wasn't the case. I just had to really think about how I was spacing it out. And it can be kind of isolating doing that work, you know, all week and for long stretches. So yeah, no, I think as therapists, there's just so much room to I mean, we're entrepreneurs and creative, and it's such an exciting time, you know, to kind of create what you want.
Yes, I love – and that, like, giving that permission, too. And I don't know if there's a little bit of, like, self-care in that of, like, your schedule or, like, how things are set up like that, because I feel like a lot of clinicians, you know, especially starting off, you kind of end up in – oftentimes like that, if it's, you know, community mental health or a school schedule or, you know, your full-time clinician mode, but it's also not for everybody. But I feel like there's almost a self-care thing in that of knowing that like there's other options.
I totally agree. I think, I had a lot of different like guilt and shame things and all kinds of things probably like pushing me to like, well, I worked so hard to get my license. I need to just do therapy all the time now. But yeah, starting to really pay out, I'm sure I'll talk more about this because I really believe in it, of paying attention to what lights you up. And, you know, notice, I talk about this a lot in consultation with clinicians, you know, what are the appointments or the work commitments where you just have that kind of sense of dread. So, mm-hmm. And what are the ones where you're just have that burst of excitement and be curious about that, you know, and notice, and yes, is it a scheduling thing or is it, you know, maybe this type of work just isn't lighting you up right now. You know, it's time to bring in something else.
Yes. Yes. And even like, I think like putting those into perspective of thinking about that, I remember for a long time, I just didn't even like put energy into that. It was just like, oh, these are my sessions. But then it was like, oh, but there's meaning, you know, which ones do I find energy and go into and come out with energy versus ones that are like, oh, and then you're like really zapped afterwards. And sometimes it's a good zap and sometimes it's a bad zap. But
I there are
paying attention.
But yeah, exactly. Really paying attention. And I think, oh my gosh, that's why to me it's so important that we are, you know, like actively engaging in consultation and supervision throughout our careers. So you have someone to really be curious. And it's all kind of managing countertransference stuff too, I think. So who are we, you know, talking about? Who can help us see who's heard all those stories and can kind of, you know, play that back for us? You know, like I've noticed, it doesn't seem like you really like working with teenagers. I mean, that's not true. That was an example.
Yes.
I do sometimes struggle. So yes, absolutely.
Yeah. And that's such an important, can you tell us a little bit more about that with supervision, consultation? It's funny because it was with Althea Simpson. I just talked with her a few weeks ago.
Yes.
The best. I love her. And she was talking about how, you know, and it is so common, especially if you have a licensure or if it's like a board certification, whatever it is you're working towards, it's like, okay, I'm just doing the supervision until I get the license and then I'm done. But that's not really, there's so much more to supervision and consultation, especially with self-care. So can you dig in a little bit about why is supervision and consultation so important to us throughout our whole career?
Oh, you spoke straight to my heart and my brain. I wish you could see me nodding my head over here, like, yes, babe. Oh my gosh, yes. Wowzers. Okay, so right? I remember feeling like, you know, supervision is this thing we have to check off our to-do list. As a graduate student, you know, I was required to have 2 years of field instruction, well, you know, field placement with a clinician supervising me, and we would have weekly supervision. And I had 1 year that was not a very nourishing experience, and 1 year that was. So I was kind of curious, you know, about that. And then when I became a field instructor, I just started to notice that that was kind of the vibe, but like for both parties often, like we, it's nice to be together. You know, it was always pleasant, but we really kind of, it's like sometimes I was watching the clock and they were watching the clock and finish your 60 minutes and kind of sign off for the week. And that became really like deeply concerning to me the longer I was in the field. Because really of seeing how burnt out people were. So like we were really underutilizing this really important 60-minute unit of time. So yes, the weekly supervision is just so much more than something to check off your to-do list. And there's so many really, to me, amazing, creative, kind of restorative ways to use that 60 minutes, to structure that 60 minutes. So I would love to, I could spend days just chatting about supervision and consultation, but that is where it kind of came out of, was just, yeah, feeling like, or yeah, I'll finish my license and great, then I won't need it anymore. And I finished my license and was like, I cannot wait to write LCSW next to my name. I'm going to know everything. It was like the biggest crash the week later, because I was like, great, I don't know anything. Turns out I still don't know anything. And so I, like, you know, sent an email to my supervisor. It was wonderful. I was like, hey, can I get on your schedule? And she was like, well, no, because, right, they have people waiting in the spot. There aren't a lot of spots at ABC.
Yes.
So I couldn't. And then I was, you know, of course, struggling with my, you know, abandonment and like, well, where am I going to talk about Casey? So I ended up, and I feel like I'm always, you know, like tuning my own horn about this one, like pursued consultation, like post-licensure consultation. I also around then just wanted to complete my registered play therapy credentials. So needed, you know, was required to have more consultation, but I still, you know, I don't have it scheduled every week, but I still, you know, make a point to see the same woman, you know, for consultation regularly. I long for a day. This is one of my like life goals, where in addition to the law and ethics requirement to keep our license, you know, for renewal, that we are required to participate in consultation, whether it be biweekly or monthly. It kind of blows my mind that we're just kind of sending people out on their own. You know, and at the core of it, right, that one of the goals of supervision is, I mean, professional growth, but it's also to protect clients. So yes. I think when we send people just newly licensed out, and you know, they aren't required to be consulting and discussing goals and countertransference and law and ethics, I think it feels somewhat negligent.
Yeah. And it's almost like this you know, that like after you get, you hit the license or you hit that mark, that then you're like, you're a non-human and not going to go through things and not going to have life transitions that affect your work or, you know, and it's like there, and I mean, it's like the world stops like, oh my gosh, there's so much to learn every, you know, we never stop learning in this field. Mm-hmm. And it kind of takes that, it feels like it doesn't take that into account.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, agreed. And, you know, the stakes are so high for so, I mean, for every clinician, of course, we work with humans, the stakes are high, but you know, I work with quite a few people who work in child welfare services. I mean, and those stakes are so high, you know, and they aren't guaranteed supervision. So, you know, I work with their paying to get it, you know, outside. And that's amazing to me. I mean, that's just so much of our field is just filled with people who are, you know, just know it's the right thing to do. So they're going to find a way. But, you know, I wish they didn't have to, you know, pay for it and do use their time after work. But the stakes are really high. They're making really big decisions. And yeah, they certainly need that space to discuss law and ethics, as well as really looking at, kind of circling back to self-care, the countertransference that comes with mm-hmm. a lot of those really acute kind of traumas and stresses that we're bearing witness to.
Yes. You know,
I think that where do those stories go? And I think that's another really important way to use supervision is you can share those stories. You know, of course, we try to not use names, just mm-hmm. call them, but yes. That is a way we can share some of that suffering we're bearing witness to.
Right. Like we have to kind of let, I mean, talk about compassion fatigue and burnout. Mm-hmm. Like when you just hold all of that stuff inside. And I know with music therapists, I've read this statistic with music therapists. And of course, there's so much more that goes into burnout and all of those things besides, you know, the heaviness of what we're doing. But the burnout rate between year 3 and 5 is like insane. It's just like that ever, like dropping like flies. And so much of it feels like, you know, that's the time where you've been in it, you're kind of, you know, maybe you're lulling or you're taking on so much if you're in a very tender type of work. And, you know, if there's not supervision or consultation, like it's like you're taking it on alone.
Oh, deep sigh of agreement. Yes. I'm sure I didn't write to name that. I'm sure.
I liked that.
Like buried in my non-verbals. That made me verbal. Yes. Gosh, right. Like the phrase that just kept like playing in my mind as you were sharing that was, who has their back? You know, who has your mm-hmm. back? And it's, you know, sounds so trite for that, but that's yes. it. Yes, it's heavy and it's heartbreaking and it overworks your brain and your heart and all of that. You know, and then you go home and you know, I'm sure we'll get into this later, but it's so isolating, you know, for the most part, you know, our family and friends don't have the same threshold and the window of tolerance for hearing about this. And for a lot of reasons, right, we don't share it with them. But even where we want to share pieces, that we don't, because it's traumatic. You know, people don't need to hear about all these sad things, but we have them. We have all of these stories inside of us.
Yes. Yes. And then something that is, I always think about this, and only because I've had so many wonderful supervisors. I've been very lucky throughout my career of having, you know, working with different supervisors and getting different styles and all these different things. But there can be times where you also have a supervisor where it's not matched or there's something off. So can you talk a little bit about like, what is that, you know, if someone's listening and they're thinking like, okay, maybe I should get supervision. What is the marker of a good supervisor, or how do you know if it's a good fit for you for supervision?
Oh, that is a million-dollar question. I just want to send love and, you know, kinship to people who are listening and have experienced that, because it can feel lonely and disappointing,
yes.
you know, and depleting. And it happens for sure.
It does. Yes.
For you right now, I'm sending you everything I've got.
Yes.
Because when you love this field, as you know, all of us do, and then you feel like somehow, you know, you've been matched with someone who's the, you know, theoretical orientation doesn't align with yours, or, you know, just has a different, style, it just is so deeply impactful, I think, on our day to day. So, I mean, my first instinct is always like, seek additional supervision and consultation. You know, certain organizations have, you know, of course, you know, have policies on whether or not that's allowed. If you're accruing out, if you're working towards accruing hours, you know, there's of course parameters. So check with your agency if that's what you're looking for. But, mm-hmm. you know, I've had people seek like monthly consultation from me, and it wasn't, you know, we of course all have our disclaimers about, you know, that you first report to your agency, but that this is like an outside person who you're going to seek additional consultation from. So that's kind of my first thought is investigate, you know, like maybe just be curious. Are you able to kind of add another layer of support? Are you able to maybe check out consultation groups just somehow to meet that need of mentorship and, you know, kinship and all of that that is so important to us? Also, if it's like a finite amount of time, I mean, I suppose it always is, if it's hours or internship and there is no, you know, other option, I would say if you're open to it, you know, to be able to talk about what's happening with your supervisor, which can be, so uncomfortable, but it's so much of what we're all about in this field is, can we talk, have hard conversations about what's happening in the here and now? And then I would think about what it is you want out of supervision. So you don't go into a conversation like that, you know, too broad, that might be uncomfortable. I have a workshop that I do. I know we'll get to this later. That's like how to maximize supervision for the supervisee and the supervisor. And I have encouraged graduate students I have who are having, you know, a mismatch, I suppose, with their supervisor of, you know, bringing in your own agenda. Like here's what we kind of create. So I've helped people design that where it's like, all right, what would feel good to you? There's a survey like I like to give in the beginning that has all these really cool questions. And then I kind of read the results and it helps me see what that person needs. And for some people, right, it's, I want to see you modeling things more. And other people is, you know, I need someone who's pretty warm and fuzzy with me. And so it's a way that I believe as a supervisor, that's our responsibility, the same way we do with clients, right? We really put a lot of time into seeing what they need, what they're looking to get out of the experience. I think we don't do that the way we should be doing as supervisors. A lot of supervisors this was kind of thrown at them at their job. Maybe they kind of all of a sudden have been in it enough years that they could do it. So they're told they have to do it and they might not really like it.
Right.
And so we see that happen. And that's, of course, always just disappointing for, you know, for an excited intern or new clinician. But I do have I know we won't get into it too much probably, but kind of like logistical ideas for how to, maybe I'll post more about that. You're inspiring me.
And then I'll follow up and link to it. And yes.
Good. How to really kind of ask for what you need and be able to kind of bring that in. Like, hey, I would love to go over like an ethical dilemma every week. I would love to do role plays. Gosh, I know that stirs up all kinds of stuff, but really like think about what you know, what it is that you need that maybe you're not getting. I think what happens more often is like small, what I hear from people is like, it just doesn't feel meaningful. Like we're talking and it's like small talk but it's not that like meaty experience that we want. And so find a way to, I can't think of any supervisor I know who wouldn't be pretty excited for a supervisee to come in and be like, here's what I really want to happen.
Right.
I mean, buy this book of vignettes. I want to see you go through the process of diagnosing so I can learn and we can do it together.
Yeah. Oh my gosh, that sounds amazing. As you're saying.
Yeah. So wow. Even if, like, honestly, look at me, new niche here. Like, consult with someone one or two times to help you design the perfect package of what you want from your supervisor.
Yes. Yeah. And what a powerful tool, like, finding, like, you know, sometimes I feel like it is like, I don't even know what I want, or I don't even know. But then it's like, okay, I can do this. Like, I can figure out where am I struggling the most, or what feels confusing to me. And like that example you just gave of like going through case studies and like diagnose, like that's so clear and such a, I think logistical, you know, bringing the logistics into the supervising. So with supervision, you know, we know it's important to like, to find the right match. And I love all the tools and finding the ways to like ground yourself logistically in a supervisory relationship. what would be some of the signs that as a clinician, you know, ideally we're getting supervision and consultation all the time, but if that's not feasible, what would be some of the signs of like, okay, you really need supervision and consultation right now, either if it's burnout or compassion fatigue, what would those signs and red flags be?
Oh, so I want to be sure that I have it. So you aren't currently in supervision, but this is a sign based on what's happening in your body and mind that you might need it.
Yeah, gosh.
You know, I have this activity that I love to do. So if we were all, if we were all together, everyone listening and you and me, or virtually, mm-hmm. and we were all on Zoom, I might say something like, okay, in the chat box, I want you to write a couple of ways that you've been negatively impacted by your work. And it's always kind of like slow to start up because it's like a little bit vulnerable. Yeah. And then they start to come in and then they start to come in really fast. So I'll see like a lot of chats coming. I'm like, write everyone that pops into your head. So it'll be, you know, headaches. I'm not sleeping, you know, isolating from friends, irritable, the work. Yes. So we'll see them all and we'll kind of pause and take some time to bear witness to everyone's. And we'll talk a little bit about it after. And so for me, it's spending the time thinking about that question. You know, what are your body cues for burnout, really, and for compassion fatigue? And we ask clients to do this all the time. So it's kind of tricky at first, but I always say, hey, we always ask our people to do this. So we kind of need to do it too. But so start to notice it. You know, what is it for you that are your own cues? And to, you know, and of course, if you're already engaged and working with a great supervisor, you will have probably looked at this so yeah. that you know then, like, okay, when I start really, like I know for me, this sounds like I'm kind of being hard on myself, but the word that pops into mind is like a martyr. I'll start to really isolate. And the mm-hmm. more about work, the more I'll give one word answers and I'll start dreaming a lot about work. And so now I know, okay. This means I might have a compassion fatigue burst coming. Mm-hmm. Not that my bursts, you know, it's not so linear. We're not burnt out or not burnt out. It's like a continuum and they kind of hit us like these big kind of like 2 week bursts, almost the way like mood stuff hits us, right? Like 2 weeks. And, you know, so when you feel those, so I think that the first part of the work with this, I think comes with really, you know, increasing that self-awareness around how does it manifest for me? Am I, like my sister, she's a teacher, but she'll always say, I know, because I just start eating like a lot more. So we've mm-hmm. kind of been able to look at that. So, you know, we're able to like help each other kind of check in with it. So I think it's just a really different, you know, it manifests differently for so many of us, but I would, yeah, spend some time, ask your people, ask your family and friends, you know, hey, what are the telltale signs for you that I'm stressed about work? Because they will know. They will be able to tell you.
I love that of asking family, you know, sometimes it's really hard to be so like that self-aware of those little things. Like I know for me, and this is something my husband would be like, yep, he would know like immediately. And it takes me so much longer to catch up. But I start like spending time when I'm like off work, which is so much harder now with teletherapy or doing, you know, of having those stricter lines, doing work or thinking about work or then talking out like a problem that's in my mind of like, oh, I could try this thing, when I'm like those boundaries start to blur and then I get stressed about it. And he's like, oh yeah, I noticed that. Like,
yes. Oh my gosh, yes. So your people, they see it, he saw it, and you know it and you know, oh gosh, that is one, isn't it? It's like I noticed for a little while, yeah, I would like, I had this long commute and I would think about work on the way home, and I would get home and I like wouldn't even have taken my bag off, and I'd have like logged on to see what I missed. And it was like this weird like work addiction, like somehow. So thank you for sharing that one. I think that absolutely comes up that okay, there's some kind of burst coming. And then so what do I need next? And I love thinking about this, like self-care work with clinicians in terms of how, like as child therapists, we kind of look at treatment planning for like regulation issues. Like we want to look at triggers, you know, but what are the buttons that get pushed? What are your compassion fatigue buttons? And then what are your body cues? And then like, what's your like cultivating resilience plan? Like, what's in your toolbox for what you're going to do when you notice that it's happened? And if we could just really kind of, you know, have like a, our own first aid kit of what, you know, knowing what to do when we're having a burst.
Yes. Yes. I love. And that's like that whole, it really is a whole treatment plan of like, doing the preventative thing of like, first you have to catch it, you know, like you have to notice it. And then what happens when it's there? You know, how do you use your coping skills and use your, you know, your toolkit? I love that idea of like a burnout compassion fatigue toolkit.
Hey, guess what? Shop where we make them.
Yes, tell us more about that because I love that. Love it.
We love that segue. Actually, one of my other signs that I, although this one can go either way, because like I'll be really, you know, maybe stressed with a lot going on, and then I'll like finally get my daughter to sleep and like go downstairs, you know, to relax or watch TV, and I'll like take my computer out right away. Right. And my husband will be like, maybe you should take a break. But like, also work excites most of us. Right. So sometimes
yes.
I get into the creative stuff. So really finding that balance there. But I had like kind of an intense issue with Etsy for a while.
And I was
ordering a lot of stuff, feeling great, supporting, you know, small business owners. But certainly buying more than I could, you know, budgeted for, more than I should. But anyhow, I found one day in my late, I'm sure, 1 a.m, still searching for like the perfect play therapy item on there, I found a woman who makes, this is crazy, I was not looking for bachelorette kits, but somehow I ended up there because I was looking for like empty first aid kit bags. I was doing this workshop and I was like, I really want to roll with this idea. I'm pretty fired up about it. How can I just buy like a bunch? It turns out, I mean, so I couldn't find them, but she made a bachelorette first aid kits, and they had like hangover kits that were in these like drawstring bags. But I wrote to her and just said, hey, could I just do a special order? And they could just say resilience kits. And so, you know, I ordered like 100, although I had like 12 people who signed up for the workshop. You know, I have a fair amount still, but now I use them, like I give them out to my grad students at the end of the year, and we kind of fill it with the different things that, you know, like whatever the kind of transitional object is to represent the skill. But that, you know, also I mostly work with almost exclusively play therapists and child therapists. So I love being able to use things that we would probably use something like this with one of our clients, you know, modified. So how does it feel? You know, does it work? Does it help you remember these when you look at your, you know, resilience kit on your desk? And then, so we make these resilience kits kind of, there's like a handful of different skills that we talk about, and then we have an item to represent it and we put it in our kit and kit stays with them. So once they know their body cues are telling them there might be a burst coming, they've got their kit.
Yes. Oh, that's so powerful to like, it's one of those feelings. Cause I know like for me with burnout, like going through cycles of burnout, it was terrifying in that, like the first time it was like, what's happening to me? Like, why am I, what are all these feelings? Why is this going on? And then once I remember landing on like, oh my gosh, this is burnout. It was again, terrifying. Cause I was like, what do I do? You know, like then you have like, it's like, okay, I know the problem, but I have no idea how to handle this. And then that like having that whole thing of like, you already have this in place. You know, now you know what to do. It's like you're plugged in and you've got this whole like support system like made for yourself. It's like pre-done.
Yes, exactly. It's pre-done and it's pre-made. And oh, I just hear you on that part about just feeling like, oh my gosh, maybe this is burnout, and how terrifying that can be. Because, you know, I would say for all of us, I believe certainly anecdotally for everyone I've met in like the helping profession, we just get like joy, peace, purpose, meaning, love, kinship, all of it comes from our work. It's just like so deeply a part of how we move through the world. But it's also the thing that causes us like wild amounts of distress and brings us self-doubt, and that's like a lot to hold all at once. So I think when we feel like we're hitting a burnout burst, we're kind of like flooded with a lot of the inner conflict that comes with, you know, this is who I am, and you know, what does this mean for the future? And it's just kind of a lot of thoughts, about feelings, about thoughts. And so sort of find a way to get grounded. And and again, I just think it's so awesomely ethical and awesome when therapists can be like putting into practice things that we ask clients to do. I think we kind of have a responsibility to do that and to see when is it hard and what makes it hard and then what helped us, you know, push through anyways.
Absolutely. And the like that process is, I mean, I had was an art therapist that came on. Oh, Yu Jung was talking about this in one of a different episode. She was talking about, she called it the gift of burnout. And I was like, it blew my mind in thinking about not only can that help us with like, you know, we're doing the things that we, you know, we say we should be, we're practicing what we preach, but that experience is so, it teaches us so much about ourselves, about like relating on a level of like, you know, feeling frightened by, you know, burnout and then thinking like, wow, this must be, you know, what does this feel like when someone gets a diagnosis? Or, you know, maybe all of these things, it's so humbling in a way. And it's just, there's so much, I think there's so many teaching elements in it too, that it's like talking about it like we are, like this normalizing just makes you realize that you can like make friends with it. And it's, you know, something we can work through.
Oh, look at that. Just like our feelings, right? We just welcome it in. Yep. Yes. Oh, I love that. Gosh, that catchphrase is just incredible, isn't it? Catchphrase more than that. The gift of burnout. And, you know, if I may, as I heard you say it, yeah. I'm thinking about how, you know, I think it pushes so many of us into like the next chapter of our work. And I hit such a rough patch, you know, around my fifth year of being in schools. And had it not been, I think, for feeling really burnt out, I wouldn't have, you know, decided to pursue play therapy. And from there, you know, I likely would never have ended up, you know, pursuing teaching. And, you know, so I do think it can, it kind of is, it's talking to us and telling us when we've, you know, either outgrown something or it's not a good fit anymore. Not always. I don't think it's always the message, but I think when we listen to it, you know, and decide, what the gift might be giving us, that is just beautiful.
Yeah. What the gift might be giving us. I love that. That's like the next tagline.
Thank you.
Yeah. What is it?
Trademark immediately.
Well done. Oh, I love that. Well, so if a therapist is in those trenches, when they're really, really in that space of like, okay, I don't know what to do. What are some other things, you know, we have supervision and consultation and then, you know, this idea of, you know, kind of having like this self-care kind of toolkit. Are there other things that therapists can access that are really helpful during that time? You know, like taking time off or, you know, spending time in, you know, nature, or what are some other things that can help therapists coming out of that?
I would love to share about this. You know, if I could just speak a little bit to kind of the skills that I've found kind of anecdotally certainly have helped me that then I, you know, teach with the people who I work with. And they're ultimately what we put in the kit. I'm selling it like I don't actually sell these kits. These don't exist other than for that one workshop. But now, hey, who knows? But in there, I really talk about what I have found and learned from people is that so reaching out and I can share a little bit more about ways, but reaching out and connecting and then you're like cultivating an inner voice that's compassionate and supportive. cognitive distraction, which is one of my favorites, which I can share more about.
Yeah, that sounds fun.
Right? Oh my gosh. Oh, and I mean, I always throw in some like deep breathing stuff. I think it's important I think it's important that we have things we can use on the job. You know, I was finding initially when I was thinking about self-care and hadn't really learned anything about it in grad school, it was things that I could do after work or on the weekends or schedule for a couple of weeks away. And really, like, it would be like noon on a Tuesday and, you know, a kid had climbed the tetherball pole and was like telling me to F off and all these teachers were like circled around me telling me to fix it. Like, things happen and you're like, but what do I do right now to get myself back to neutral? Like how right in this moment, because I have to go work another 4 hours and I have to figure out what to do. Mm-hmm. So I really believe in kind of teaching and practicing a lot of that. So of course, breathing, to have a breathing strategy in your back pocket that you believe in, that you practice regularly to get your heartbeat regulated, you know, to get your nervous system regulated. I also believe we have to be doing that regularly if we are ever going to suggest a client do it. We have to have actually done it and seen that it really does help. So that one, I would say cognitive distraction. I love to give it that fancy therapy name. But I think we have to insert a stop sign into our therapy brains that are overworked and overwhelmed and overtired and give it respite. And, you know, I think the same is true with like grief, people going through grief and other experiences. Of course, we want to help you learn to feel feelings and be with feelings, but our head can kind of mess with us. We also want to give our brain a little bit of respite and in small doses, and I think also work. So like for me, I have a really like restorative relationship with reality TV. So I can watch like 15 minutes of reality TV. If I can feel like my shoulders are super tense, I keep replaying that conversation I had with that student over and over and over. I'm like obsessively drafting emails. Like, okay, I can see I've been triggered because my triggers are definitely like anyone thinking I didn't do a good enough job. Students. And then I go right to like, okay, I'm tense, I'm ruminating, I'm fixating. So, okay, what do I need to do? So I like in my head now can go to my kit, like, do I need to do deep breathing? Well, I can, but I don't know if that's really gonna, you know, hit the mark this time. Uh-huh. Do I reach out and connect? Sure. Maybe I'll try that in a little bit, but I need to get back to baseline pretty quickly because I have to teach in half an hour. You know, I can certainly talk to myself and use my inner voice, but so in those cases for me, like, you know, like 10 minutes of like Southern Charm. I make no money from Southern Charm. I just recently discovered it and I'm not super proud of it, but it really inserts a stop sign.
Yes.
And can get me back to neutral. So that's always what I'm looking for. So I would say, and so that's a really big one that I think we don't, as therapists, it's not like in our nature, right, to like encourage that a lot. But I think small doses of, you know, what is it going to take right now to help you get back to neutral so that then we can reach out, you know, to one of your people. And then, you know, you can really focus on your inner voice saying to yourself, like, not everybody has to think you're the best professor. That's okay.
Yes. I love that. And it's like so validating to hear you say that because I don't do this, but I'm always tempted. And now I think I might start doing it. I love true crime. And that's my, you know, reality TV thing is it's true. It's, you know, true crime podcasts or true crime, you know, shows. And sometimes it is, it's just like, oh, I can just sneak in like 15 minutes. Like, and that's so like thinking of it, having a function like that is even better. than just like, I just love true crime. And I love that it's like, it can be such a powerful tool in that way.
Oh, please do it. Yeah. And now, right, we're giving it like a name and like legs to stand on for why it's good for your nervous system. Just today, I was just sharing with you earlier, we're all kind of quarantined here. So my daughter went out with my sister for a little bit. And I had like 20, maybe half an hour before I had to start teaching. So I was like, of course, I had this long to-do list. Mm-hmm. And I really did. I knew I was coming on this podcast, so I had to actually be practicing what I preach, what I teach. And I was like, I'm going to unload the dishwasher and set up my my laptop so that I can watch Southern Charm episode 4, like the first 20 minutes while I unload the dishwasher, knowing like I probably could have used my time differently. But it's amazing to me how fast I can feel myself start to get back to neutral. It's just to all of you out there. I mean, and it's just hard to put into words what your brain and your nervous system and your heart take on in a day, in an hour, in a week. And sometimes we just have to let it rest. We just have to give it a break.
Uh-huh. And I feel like sometimes it needs like, it's almost like a stop sign slapping you in the face to stop. You know, like, sometimes it's like, I see the stop sign, but I'm just going to walk past it. it needs the rest.
It just sounds like an awesome image from like a cartoon show of just this like big glove with stop just like whacking you. Yeah, exactly.
Yes, absolutely. Oh my gosh. Yes, I love all of those are such fantastic. I just love those different ideas. And you also like, you have tons of your workshops that you do and like your thing is supporting therapists and their self-care and, you know, their own resilience. Can you tell us a little bit about some of those things that you offer in your workshops for therapists too?
Yes. Thank you for asking. Yes.
Yeah.
So So I am a registered play therapist supervisor, and I became an approved provider for the Association for Play Therapy. You know, I always say I feel like play therapy saved me, after a burnout burst. So I started doing workshops. People need to meet these certain hours, and I was doing it on interventions and tools, but so much of what was like lighting me up in the workshop, I would notice, I'd be like, oh, let's just get through these first 4 hours so we can get to the end when we really get to talk about like how they're doing and what things are like. So I just started to notice my own, like what was lighting me up the most, yeah, really being able to like help therapists kind of like unzip their insides and kind of like spill out what they were willing to, and then, you know, kind of work together to find ways to, you know, zip back up and kind of go on with our day. And then how do we kind of unzip? And you know, so much of what I was learning was what I already knew from my own experience in the, you know, smaller sample size I had of supervisees I'd worked with, but then on like a larger scale, just to hear like kind of across the board, people were, you know, therapists just not feeling seen and heard or valued or prepared for what they were about to do. And mm-hmm. You know, I became really, interested in a lot of the moral injury and moral distress that was happening for practitioners working in, you know, public education or child welfare or agencies that, you know, felt out of alignment with their code of ethics and what they believed in. And I started teaching in graduate school, and it's hard to put into words what it's like to be able to spend your days with rooms full of social worker students, because it's the most hopeful, like restorative experience. But I was seeing it from them too. Like, gosh, they haven't even gotten into the field yet, and they are so wildly burnt out, you know, and they're being misused as interns, and, you know, they're not having a chance to process any of this. And we're kind of sending them out already underprepared, emotionally, to be able to take it on. So anyways, I got very curious. I know that's kind of a long background to it. So I started to want to put workshops together just focused on this. And I thought, oh, I know people want stuff that's BBS approved. And, you know, So I started to, I won't name too many names, but different associations I'd worked with and boards were like, yeah, you know, I'd had many workshops approved for hours, but anything that had the word self-care in it, I would kind of get the like, eh, we don't really, can you reword it? Or no, we don't really do workshops on self-care, and, you know, kind of market it differently. And it was enraging, but it was fascinating to me. Like, oh my gosh, as a field, we are really, look at what we're doing. We are seeing self-care frivolous and unnecessary and almost kind of like shaming, I think, people who need it. And so all of that was like deeply concerning. So I started to put workshops together, and now, I've done a couple that they aren't approved for hours, but it was okay. People didn't mind. I started to learn. People were like, that's okay. We will do 2 hours still, even if we can't get CEU. So that freed up a lot. And then like a few agencies Vista Hill, Seneca Families, both in California, but they were doing amazing work prioritizing self-care. And so they, you know, had brought me on to do some work. So there's some agencies that it's beautiful to see that they'll budget for it. And, you know, others who really should be, you know, aren't.
Yes.
So that was exciting. I've done a couple, you know, online now, kind of, they're surviving in the trenches of a pandemic as a therapist. That's
my gosh, like
my catchiest title. But it was wild to me to hear about what people were doing, trying to adapt their whole practice while they were themselves going through the same toxic stress their clients were. And so how to look at that. So yeah, I have a couple of workshops. I have one for parents. My favorite is being with therapists always. So I have that. I'll probably offer that again in the new year when my teaching schedule slows down.
Nice.
So I love it when I can work with agencies, but I also have done them for like small groups can reach out and just say, hey, there's like 6 of us who want, you know, want to do this. And can you run it? And it's really going through the kits, kind of creating your own kit with your plan. So that's it. And then I see the most incredible humans of all time in supervision and consultation who are just, I mean, therapists, right? They're just the best humans, all therapists out there, right? Especially, right? Our play, drama, music, art, all our people who understand that change and healing happens from the neck down. Everybody else doing all this work from the neck up right now. and you need to be taken care of.
Yes. Just that's so, you need to be taken care of. Yes. Yeah. Oh, that's so, so powerful. And it's so frustrating that it is something like it's a systemic issue. Like it is not just like, no wonder why we're burning out. And, you know, we're like, I think you had mentioned too, of like, this isn't in grad school, you know, there isn't talk about, you know, who are you as a person, of what does that mean in your therapy work? And I feel it maybe grazed over, you know, it's mentioned or read one article about it. I feel like maybe that's probably the extent.
Right. And it should be embedded into everything we do. Well, yeah, and it's so deeply tied to what brought you to this work and all of that, that we're, you know, we touch on it maybe in a class here or there in grad school, but, you know, we talk about, you know, self of the therapist and, you know, healer, heal thyself, or all those different kind of things you'll hear in the field. And if we're not doing it in grad school, which I think we're not, I can say, at least my experience as a student in academia and now as someone teaching in academia. And then if we're not embedding it into supervision, because we have people supervising who maybe didn't even want to supervise in the first place, you know, and they're not, you know, receiving a lot of high level professional development and how to supervise, you know, where are we doing it?
Yes.
And that's an ethical issue. When I think about it, I'm like, this is really an ethical issue. If we aren't teaching clinicians how to take care of themselves, but then we're saying, absolutely, you can see 8 clients in a day, close the door. We're not going to require any kind of, you know, observation or any of that. We're just going to like, you know, hope it's all going well.
Yes, it is. Oh my gosh. I think it's ethical. And I mean, if you think of any, like, you know, I'm thinking of like for music therapy, like our scope of practice or our domains of learning. And oh, there goes my dog. it's like one of those things where it feels so necessary in that it's like, oh, this is something you should take care of and like be mindful or conscious of. But then there's no, where's the support for it? You know, like how could you not get continuing education credits for it? Like it should, like you said, like, this is just mandatory and part of it all. It would just be integrated.
Agreed. And I think, yeah, the ways we could do it, like systemically, if we were to look at it, could the boards also, well, maybe they, I get why they might not be able to require supervision for your whole life.
Yes.
But at least to start with, okay, so like in California for us, we have to do 6 hours every renewal cycle in law and ethics. We should certainly be required to do, you know, 4 to 6 hours in managing countertransference or, you know, self-care, however they want us to brand it. But that, I mean, to me, that's doable. That can be, they could do that.
Yes, like personal development, you know, like there's so much that could fall under that. It's like just growing as, because we use so much of ourselves and what we, obviously in what we do, we're humans, you know, it's human, very human work. So how can we not be spending that time not only to take care of ourselves, but then getting the support, having supervisors who have our back and like all of that stuff plays into that.
Yes. Remembering what brought you here and all of it.
Yes, yes. Oh my gosh, that's so powerful. Oh my goodness. This has been so wonderful. Sarah, I'm wondering if you can tell our listeners if they're interested in your awesome workshops, in, you know, following you. I am a huge fangirl of your Instagram. All like I am every time you post something, I'm just like, yes, yes, my soul needed this. Yes.
that is the greatest burst of excitement. You don't know when you're posting, like, oh, am I posting too much? Or is this resonating at all? But you like it.
I love it. I know it is so much of like throwing it out into the ether. And then it's like, okay, it's out there. Just let it be. No, I love it. But where can you tell our listeners, and I'll have all the links in the show notes, but can you tell us also where to find you, where to find your workshops and how to follow you?
Yes, I would love that. And I would love to connect with all of you. My gosh, it just would be amazing for me. So yes, Instagram, which is like still kind of new for me, but I am sold. Because you and all these amazing therapists. So I am, it's @healwithplay, and always feel free to message me. That's seems to be actually the fastest way. And sometimes people will message me and, you know, to have more, you know, I'm always willing to share any of the materials I brought up today. You know, I'm happy to send them to you. So, like if you send me a message and then usually I'll say, oh, just, you know, email me or so always feel free to send me a, I believe they call it a DM. I just learned. Yeah. So please, by all means, my website, is sarahscottdueling.com. I would love it if you wanted to just check it out. Current workshop. So my fall teaching semester was a little bit bananas. It wraps up next week. So really in January, I'll be kind of back doing some cool stuff. So I'll post about that, but really what's been kind of working, anyone out there who might be listening, who works for an agency, or if you have a group of, you know, colleagues or friends, I mean, I'm doing everything virtually now, but who I'm kind of, I love this idea of, like concierge CEUs. This
is like, yeah. The other
team, right? Like,
yes.
You kind of can, and of course I can, you know, you can always interview me, vet me, but I've kind of been doing that a little bit, which has been cool. So I'll post some stuff that I'm offering. I'm really excited to offer some like self-care consult groups that will be coming up. But if you're interested in any of the workshops that I haven't posted yet, but you'd like it to go to your agency or to a group who you know, always, send me a direct message or an email, and I would love to talk to you about it.
That is awesome. I love that, like a la carte.
I just had someone ask me about it, and I was like, this is amazing. I love this idea. And when we're in person again, can you imagine? I'll bring you all snacks, coffee, make sure you're comfy, right? Like, that is always my dream of continuing ed. Like, we can't learn and take stuff in unless we just feel so safe and so relaxed. And so always my dream when I do workshops is just that we have like hearty belly laughs and we have like awesome oxytocin bursts and we learn a little bit, you know, have fun. And that's my dream for how continuing education should be fun.
I love that. And I feel like this episode is just a perfect mirror to that, because I feel like I've laughed so heartily and felt so comfortable. And I, oh my gosh, that just sounds CEUs and like all of that in like pajamas with like good friends just sounds like a slumber party that I want to go to.
I mean, this is where we got to get our inner child totally invested in
this. Yes. I love it. Oh my goodness. Well, Sarah, this has just been so lovely. Thank you so much again for coming on. This was awesome.
Thank you, Kate. This was just a dream. This is for sure the highlight of my week. I'm sure it will be all week. Thank you, everybody. I hope to see your faces and hear from you, and it would just be awesome to connect.
All right. I hope you guys enjoyed that episode. Sarah's energy is just so contagious. I had so much fun in this interview, and I feel like I learned so much about coming out of burnout and all the different things that you can do. And Sarah's website, and I seriously, her Instagram account is one of my favorite Instagram accounts. It's just so wonderful to follow, and like her posts will come up in my feed, and I think almost every time I see one of her posts, I end up sighing with like a, oh, like I feel that, and wow, that's incredibly powerful, and I really needed that today. So I highly encourage you to follow her on Instagram, join her newsletter, check out her website. All of these workshops and everything that she does is so specialized and just so wonderful. And again, it's so important that we have advocates like Sarah who are advocating for clinicians just the same way that we as clinicians are advocating for our clients. So it is December. There are only a few more weeks left until the end of this year, until the end of 2020. Again, we have that really awesome giveaway happening over on Instagram, so don't forget to check that out. But also for this end of the year, I would absolutely love, 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 and be endlessly appreciative if you were able to hop on either if you could do it on iTunes or you could do it through Apple Podcasts and leave us a review, leave us a rating if you subscribe. Any of those things are so, so powerful for us. you know, as podcasters, we do this for free. You know, we put in a lot of work and put just love putting out this material and making it free for people. But so those small things really add up in supporting us. It's the best way that you can support us. Again, too, you can always pass along the word, tell a friend, share our stuff on Instagram, join the newsletter. All of those things are really wonderful too. But as you're listening to this episode, it's always easy to hop on over and subscribe, rate, and review. So that would be a lovely way to end the year of 2020 is getting some new reviews up on our podcast. So also there is our anonymous survey always located in our show notes. So if at any time you have something that you would like to share, there's something that you want to call attention to in our episodes, something you want to hear more of, any of that stuff, that space is for you. So please use that. I take those very, very seriously. And I enjoy any time hearing from listeners, constructive criticism, anything like that, because this is for you. And your input is so, so valuable to making what we do over here better and serving you in the best way possible. So this is a two-way street. So also feel free, just reach out and email to kate@creativetherapyumbrella.com. Reach out to me on Instagram. You can message me. I love hearing from you. So I am sending you the best wishes and hope that you're having a wonderful week so far. Thank you so, so much again. So much gratitude to you for being a listener and supporter, and be creative.